Friends, this is Dr. Beter. Today is February 28, 1982, and this is my audio letter number 72. On the final Sunday evening of last month, January 31, millions of Americans tuned in their TV sets to watch a special movie on NBC. It was a major production, shown in two installments on successive nights. The movie was titled World War III. Viewers were drawn into a snow-swept world of rugged terrain, supposedly in Alaska. At a lonely outpost of the distant early warning radar network, an unidentified blip appeared on the radar screen. As it did so, one crew member, supposedly a Soviet spy, calmly killed all the others, preventing an alert signal to NORAD. The blip turned out to be a Russian transport, which dropped a team of Arctic commandos onto the frozen Alaska wilderness. As the plot unfolded, it turned out that the Russian commandos were there to sabotage the Alaska oil pipeline. They had been sent to Alaska by Kremlin hardliners who thought that they could use the sabotage threat to undo an American grain embargo against Russia. Instead, the plan failed, leading finally to simultaneous orders by both sides for a nuclear first strike. During those two evenings of an imaginary build-up to World War III, a surprisingly realistic atmosphere was created. There were many technical inaccuracies, but they hardly mattered. What did matter was the emotional impact of the movie, and on that level it was very effective. Here in the United States, there is a growing fascination with violence, bloodshed, and war. More and more of our entertainment is built around themes of hostility and destruction. This trend is visible in sports, in music, in literature, in motion pictures, and in television. It seems as if we have been too well off for too long in terms of material things. We have a restless craving for change. My friends, what seems to be happening now in America was expressed long ago by the Spanish writer and philosopher Don Miguel de Unamuno. During the latter part of the 19th century, Unamuno kept a secret and mostly spiritual diary at his workroom in Salamanca, Spain. His last full entry was made in January 1902. 70 years later, the diary was discovered and published, first in Spain and later in an English translation here in America by the Princeton University Press. The Unamuno diary, titled The Tragic Sense of Life in Men and Nations, seems as relevant today as if it were freshly written. Unamuno wrote, and I quote, "Men seek peace, they say, but do they really? They are also said to seek liberty. Not at all. They look for peace in time of war, and for war in time of peace. They seek liberty under tyranny, and tyranny when they are free." Unquote. My friends, these few words of the Spanish philosopher Unamuno seem to describe America today. There has not been a war on American soil, except for Pearl Harbor, in the memory of any living American. And we have possessed freedom for so long that we take it for granted. So now we are blindly following leaders who are betraying us into the ultimate in both war and tyranny. My three special topics for this audio letter are topic number one, nuclear war fever and expanding secret warfare. Topic number two, the third space shuttle challenge to Russia. And topic number three, the shortening timetable for nuclear war one. Topic number one. Day by day, the pitch of war fever is rising steadily here in the United States. Every night on the television news, turmoil in Central America is a leading topic. In El Salvador, a government that continuously violates the human rights of its own people is being propped up by the so-called Reagan administration. The El Salvador situation contains the seeds of another Vietnam, in spite of White House lies to the contrary. Like the ill-fated South Vietnam, El Salvador is riddled with corruption throughout the government and military. In both cases, this situation resulted from CIA tampering with each country's power structure. Two decades ago, America started wading into the Vietnam quagmire by way of secret groups of advisors, so-called, unknown to the American public. And today, the same thing is underway in El Salvador. We're told that there are only a handful of non-combatant advisors there. That, my friends, is a lie. As of now, there are already more than 300 Green Berets in El Salvador, with more on the way. We're also hearing sharp words from the White House, directed at Nicaragua. Over 5 years ago, I gave a warning about Russia's rapid progress in gaining influence there. But at that time, America's rulers were trying to save their crumbling secret alliance with the Kremlin, so they said not a word to the public about Nicaragua. Today, the secret alliance is long gone, so today we are hearing years late about Nicaragua. Overseas, too, the clouds of approaching war are growing darker and darker. In the Middle East, Israel is threatening a major invasion of Lebanon, which could not fail to lead to war with Syria. The American Bolshevik Zionist war whirlpool is continuing to spread outward from its source, Israel. 2 months ago, in Audio Letter 70, I gave an alert to watch for new turmoil in Iran to erupt shortly. Now, Iran is back in the news, right on schedule. There have been new bombings in Tehran, a reminder of the prospects for civil war there. At the same time, we're hearing reports that the alleged Ayatollah Khomeini is ill and may die soon. Once again, that is a lie, as part of the grand plan to manipulate us into war. The real Ayatollah Khomeini was killed and replaced with a devil 2 years ago this month, as I reported in Audio Letter 54. When the American Bolshevik war planners here in the United States are ready to play their Iran card in the war buildup, we'll be told that Khomeini has died. United States-connected Bolshevik agents in Iran are poised and ready to stir up civil war there. As the situation worsens, we'll be told that Russia is preparing to turn Iran into another Afghanistan. Already, Chief United States Arms Negotiator Eugene V. Rostow is making statements to help pave the way for all this. Lately, he has been quoted to the effect that Russia can be expected to test us, quote-unquote, over Iran. Once again, America's Bolshevik military planners are preparing to use Iran as one key to their elaborate nuclear first strike plan against Russia. Their military strategy is an updated version of the plan I detailed 3.5 years ago in Audio Letter 37. The determination of the American Bolsheviks here to go to war against Russia is becoming evident in other ways, too. One arena is that of the supposed nuclear arms reduction talks in Geneva. As a grandstand play, the entity President Reagan has proposed the so-called zero option to eliminate all nuclear weapons in Europe. It sounds good, but it has no substance. In the actual negotiations to figure out how to carry out this plan, the United States has made no practical proposals at all. In response, the Russians have made two counterproposals during recent weeks. One would begin by freezing nuclear weapons in Europe. That starting point may not be ideal, my friends, but at least it's clear-cut and possible to do. Washington's response was to ridicule the idea. The other Russian proposal was made just a few days ago. It's for both sides to completely halt all manufacture and testing of all nuclear weapons as a starting point for general disarmament. For the moment, the White House seems to have been taken off guard. Soon, though, you can count on the fact that this idea, too, will be rejected with some excuse by the United States. Because, my friends, nuclear disarmament is the last thing our American Bolshevik rulers here want. Instead, the government is now publicizing its intentions to prosecute youngsters who fail to register for the draft. The entity Reagan is talking out of both sides of his mouth about the draft. He keeps telling us that there is no intention to actually bring back the draft. But on the other hand, we're now told that anyone who fails to sign up for the draft may be bundled off to federal prison. At the same time, civil defense has become a hot new topic of promotion by the so-called Reagan administration. The agency which is spearheading this drive is relatively new, having been lifted straight from the pages of the secret new Constitution for America. It's called the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. FEMA is doing its best to lull us to sleep about the dangers of nuclear war. The agency says, for example, that, quote, the United States could survive nuclear attack and go on to recovery within a relatively few years, unquote. FEMA is planting articles in newspapers nationwide to drive home this comforting lie. These planted articles try to tell us that all we would have to do is to evacuate our cities, learn a little survival training, and fix up some simple fallout shelters, and we'll all do just fine. My friends, these articles planted by an agency of the federal government are the worst kind of lies. Just one H-bomb exploding on one major city would overwhelm all the hospitals of America with grisly casualties. But our leaders want you to believe otherwise, so that you will follow them into a suicidal war. Recently, George Kennan wrote an article which expressed very well the state of mind of those who now control America's military policies. Back in the days of the secret Rockefeller-Soviet alliance, Kennan was one of the proponents of the policy of containment of Russia. Now the situation has changed radically, and in the New York Review of Books for January 21, 1982, Kennan wrote an article titled, On Nuclear War. Kennan said, quote, there is no issue at stake in our political relations with the Soviet Union. No hope, no fear, nothing to which we aspire, nothing we would like to avoid, which could conceivably be worth a nuclear war, unquote. And further on he added, quote, this entire preoccupation with nuclear war is a form of illness. It is morbid in the extreme. There is no hope in it, only horror. It can be understood only as some form of subconscious despair on the part of its devotees, some sort of death wish, a readiness to commit suicide for fear of death, unquote. My friends, Kennan could not be more accurate in describing the state of mind of those who now control America's military plans, the American Bolsheviks here. Ever since Russia's military takeover of space in late 1977, military planning here in America has taken on a kamikaze mentality. It's the concept of victory through suicide. I gave details about this new suicidal streak in our military planning in the summer of 1978 in Audio Letter 35. It is this hopelessness that led to America's shift to a first-strike nuclear strategy against Russia, which I first reported in Audio Letters 36 and 37. The American Bolsheviks, who now hold the reins of America's military, are satanic and schizophrenic in their thinking. They're opposed to everything that our Lord Jesus Christ stands for, truth, hope, and love. They live by lies and deception, and they are afflicted by utter hopelessness and self-hatred. They do indeed have a death wish, and they want to take the rest of us with them. As war fever is building for public consumption, the secret war is continuing to escalate. Last month I reported on Russia's renewed geophysical warfare, involving especially weather modification and artificial earthquakes. These things are intended to reduce America's ability to go to war. Canada, too, is being drawn into the American Bolshevik war camp. And recently, parts of Canada have suffered such extreme blizzard conditions that a national emergency was declared. I also reported on two incidents in which Russian cosmospheres triggered plane crashes last month. I can now add something very important to that report. The rash of strange plane crashes that began with Air Florida Flight 90 on January 13 involved more than just a general warning from the Kremlin. They were in direct response to a specific act of secret warfare. For over 4 years now, Russian electrogravitic weapons platforms called Cosmospheres have been hovering high over the United States. They first announced their presence by creating giant air booms along the East Coast and elsewhere. Since that time, their numbers have multiplied, and they patrol continuously over all kinds of American strategic target areas. When war comes, the American Bolsheviks here plan to shoot down as many cosmospheres as possible, using high-power lasers. I reported this at least 3 years ago in my audio letter reports. Until recently, however, it's been very hard to detect cosmospheres floating overhead. They're invisible to normal radar, except at very close range. But now, one of the crash weapons projects here in the United States has made it easier to detect cosmospheres and to aim lasers at them. The new technique, called computer-enhanced infrared, is an extremely sensitive means of detecting the heat radiation given off by cosmospheres. It's known by the acronym CEIR, pronounced SEER. On the evening of January 12, 1982, a complete operational test was carried out against a cosmosphere which was patrolling high over central New Jersey. SEER was used to aim a ground-based high-power laser at the cosmosphere. Then the laser was fired. A section of the cosmosphere erupted into blue-green flames. As the flames started to spread, the crew accelerated the cosmosphere toward the coast. All cosmosphere crews are under strict orders to make certain that their craft never fall into non-Russian hands, and they were making for the sea. The stricken cosmosphere, trailing blue-green flames, was seen over a large area of eastern Pennsylvania and central New Jersey. It had been hovering at an altitude of more than 40 miles, but it came down fast. Its semi-rigid shell started crumpling. It passed over Atlantic City at low altitude and plunged into the water just a few miles offshore. Many witnesses watched as the remains of the cosmosphere burned, floating on the surface of the water for nearly 10 minutes. The whole incident created a sensation in the local region, but official government spokesmen have treated it all as a non-event. This very first downing of a cosmosphere created shock waves in the Kremlin. It was decided very quickly that a clear message should be sent to the Pentagon that they would pay dearly if the incident should be repeated. The Russians knew that a laser had shot down their cosmosphere. So the very next day, an air Florida flight with laser warfare specialists aboard was caused to crash here in Washington. Then came a string of crashes and near crashes, all of them supposedly unexplainable. All four Air Force Thunderbird demonstration jets were made to crash, as I explained last month. A Boeing 737 in California dropped far below its flight path, seemingly without cause, and narrowly missed disaster as it clipped some power lines. And strangest of all, a Japan Airlines DC-8 crashed into Tokyo Bay during the final moments of its landing approach. It was a perfect flying day, clear and sunny. The DC-8 was only 1,000 yards from touchdown, flying in a gentle glide. There were no mechanical problems. Suddenly, the pilot acted as if he were dazed. Reportedly, he reached over and reversed thrust on two of the four jet engines. The big jet nosed downward. It smashed into light stanchions marking the approach path and crashed into the shallow water. Later, in the hospital, the pilot said he had blacked out. The co-pilot reportedly said he too suddenly felt woozy, but fought it and remained conscious. My friends, there's not time to go into the full details of all of these incidents. It's enough to say that in every case, including the Japanese crash, the targets were chosen to convey a crystal-clear warning to certain people. In every case that I have mentioned, a Russian cosmosphere used a neutron beam weapon to bring about these strange results. As I've explained before, neutron beams disrupt electronic instruments and also the mental and nervous systems of people. The Russians are saying to the American Bolshevik Pentagon, in effect, if you shoot down any more cosmospheres, there will be no place to hide. The secret war is growing more and more intense as we get closer to the outbreak of all-out war. At the same time, the alignments of powers, great and small, are continuing to shift and settle into place. Last month in Audio Letter 71, I reviewed in some detail the three main power factions in the world today and the relationships among them. One faction is that of the Rockefeller Cartel, the multinational complex of big oil, big banking, and big business. Another faction is the Bolshevik Zionist Axis, with headquarters shared between the United States, especially New York City, and Israel. The third faction is that of the new rulers of Russia, who have expelled most of the Bolsheviks formerly in power there. Last month I reported that a new operational relationship is in the works between Russia's new rulers and the Rockefeller cartel. I can now report that as of now, the emerging quid pro quo falls far short of the secret alliance that used to exist. Instead, it's basically an agreement not to damage one another as a matter of deliberate policy. The prime objective is to free both of them, the Russians and the Rockefeller cartel, to deal with their mutual enemy, the American Bolsheviks, who have infiltrated key policy-making government positions here in Washington. The main area in which the Rockefeller cartel can be helpful to the Russians is in the economic sphere. The American Bolshevik-dominated foreign policy of the United States is a policy of economic starvation against Russia and her satellites. The Rockefeller cartel is in a position to partially blunt these policies by cooperating with Russia and East-West trade. American Bolshevik economic warfare against the Soviet bloc is most apparent right now in the plight of Poland. The American Bolsheviks here finally succeeded in using the Solidarity Labor Union to push Poland into martial law. Now martial law itself is being used as an excuse to make the Polish people suffer even more at America's hands. A thinly disguised food embargo is in place by the United States against Poland. Even chicken feed is being held back in order to create disaster for Poland's own chicken farms. Everything possible is being done to drive the Polish people to such desperation that open revolt will erupt. The collapse of Poland poses a military threat to Russia and is an economic drain as well. Russia's new rulers are working with an unwieldy centralized economy left behind by the expelled Bolsheviks. It cannot be changed overnight, so the Russians are vulnerable to economic warfare. In order to avoid economic disaster, the Russians are pushing hard for new ways to raise hard Western currency. Last month, I reported on one of these Russian moves, a major coup in United States Treasury securities. But for the long term, the Russians want to establish more stable and mutually beneficial economic ties with the West. The centerpiece of Russia's economic drive now is the Siberian gas pipeline for Western Europe. It's a $25 billion project, the biggest ever between the Soviet Union and the West. It will be completed in 1984. The Bolsheviks here are trying to completely stop the gas pipeline project. But the Rockefeller oil and business cartel is trying to help the pipeline project go ahead. Earlier this month, on February 17, the United States Chamber of Commerce, a longtime Rockefeller public relations organ, went public about the pipeline. It called the Reagan embargo against pipeline equipment a strategy of economic warfare against Russia. Just last week, the Joint Economic Committee of Congress endorsed the pipeline project. And in Europe, American multinational oil companies are lining up in support of the gas pipeline. All of them, that is, except one, Mobil Oil. Unlike the other members of the Rockefeller big oil cartel, Mobil Oil in West Germany has been publicly opposing the gas pipeline. To the Russians, the gas pipeline is a matter of economic survival. And with all-out war on the horizon, the Kremlin has no patience with those who say one thing and do another. The Russians regard Mobil's position against the pipeline as a double cross, in effect siding with the Bolsheviks here in America. Russia's rulers decided to give Mobil Oil strong reasons to rethink their position, and fast. On Thursday, February 11, the Russian container ship Mechanik Tarasov departed from a port in Quebec, Canada, bound for Leningrad. It headed northeast up the St. Lawrence River, then out through the Gulf of St. Lawrence into the Atlantic. After skirting the south coast of Newfoundland, the Tarasov set course east by northeast. Its course was chosen to take it very close to the world's largest semi-submersible oil rig, passing it on the south. The rig was the Ocean Ranger, operated by Mobil Oil. It was supposedly unsinkable, like the Titanic. The Tarasov, like many other Russian merchant ships, possessed a military capability that was not admitted. As it neared the giant oil rig in a mounting storm, it launched a homing torpedo with a low-yield nuclear warhead toward the rig. Just before 1 a.m. Monday morning, February 15, the torpedo reached its target, one of the giant underwater pontoons. Nuclear explosions underwater are far more confined than those in air, and this one was hidden by the hurricane-force winds and pounding waves. A hole was blasted in the pontoon, and the Ocean Ranger started settling toward that side. The crew gave a trouble call by radio. Half an hour later, they reported that they were manning the lifeboats. But the Japanese-built Ocean Ranger was designed to be the world's most unsinkable oil rig. A corner of the upper platform dipped into the water and then stopped. The rig stayed afloat, listing at a crazy angle. The roughnecks stopped boarding the lifeboats, hoping the boats would not be needed after all. Then a cosmosphere, hovering high above the rig, took aim at the corner of the rig which had dipped into the water. A powerful blast from its charged particle beam weapon blew a hole in the partially submerged corner. Immediately, the Ocean Ranger heeled over and sank. It went down so fast that it was too late for lifeboats to be launched successfully, and all hands were lost. The freighter Tarasov continued on course after sinking the oil rig. The Russians expected that the freighter would be long gone before anyone figured out what had happened, but they miscalculated. At around 2 p.m. that same afternoon, Monday, February 15, an American attack submarine was closing in on the Tarasov. The sub fired a single torpedo at the Tarasov, hitting it broadside. Water surged in through a giant hole below the waterline, and the freighter started sinking. Like the crew of the Cosmosphere that was shot down over New Jersey last month, the crew of the Tarasov had strict orders to protect the secrets of their ship. And so, the Russian captain refused assistance from a nearby Danish freighter as his ship sank with its secrets. Apparently, my friends, Mobil Oil got the message. Just 2 days after the sinking of the Ocean Ranger, Mobil Oil shut down the other two oil rigs, which had been nearby, and towed them ashore. But our leaders still have not gotten the message. They are still leading us straight into Nuclear War I.